Somerville, Massachusetts. And you can look them up online and RSVP to that. And it's exciting way to celebrate all the things they've done for the Latino immigrants in Boston.
And we also have another announcement that we had a caller call in and let us know about. This is a party slash concert next week in Everett, Massachusetts. It's called Rock Noel 2008, and it is at Café Bello in Everett, Massachusetts. The band that's going to be playing is B57. Again, that's next Friday. And we actually have a pair of tickets to give away to that. So if anyone wants those, give us a call, 617-253-8810. Si quieren un par de boletos para un concierto próximo viernes en Café Bello, Everett, Massachusetts. La banda es B57. Nos pueden llamar aquí en el estudio 617-253-8810.
And did you have an announcement, Amy, as well?
My announcement is that we want to make sure that people know that we were interviewing the band Cordero, and that they are playing later on this evening, and I was hoping that we might go out with a little bit more from the De Donde Eres album. How's that?
Sounds great.
So you want to pick a song, or should I pick?
Omar, you want to pick a song?
Omar.
Pick the last one.
This is true. How about La Vida Sencilla?
Hey. La Vida Sencilla.
Perfecto. Great way to end. Okay, that was subtle, wasn't it? Dale. Say bye.
Adios. Todos.
Bye. Bye. See you at the
Muchas
show.
Muchas gracias.
Gracias.
Hasta la próxima. Come on now.
Todos contentos.
فمرحبا من الدكتور جالس السكران to Music for Human. I am الدكتور جالس السكران and I welcome you to Music for Human. I have with me today Lester Woods, ordained light minister.
Good evening.
Welcome, Lester.
Thank you.
I was journeying around earlier today and I saw, you know, I was in the middle of a meditation and I began to wander and I saw what appeared to me as a very strange device into which people would deposit coins, you know, little circular metal discs engraved, and out of which would emerge little canisters of liquids, presumably.
And what do you make of this?
Well, my thinking was that it was some sort of strange...
almost like a tectonic movement.
Yeah, sort of vaguely, also vaguely reproductive in nature.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's actually one thing that I had been studying on recently, and that's something I was hoping we could perhaps bring up for today, is basically geo-organization. And I think that that's actually one perfect example of some of these things that you might see in your everyday life and come across in your journeys.
And tectonic organization is such a violent thing, really. I mean, when we notice it. But it occurs constantly.
That's true. You know, the ancient crusts of the Paleocean basins, they're actually always moving. And this maybe isn't something that usually affects us up here on land above the water, but it is definitely one of the inner nature forces of the Earth that is making rounds. It's really just a cyclical process where some plates are going down and others are going up, and you have this new creation of land. It's really an amazing process.
Mm-hmm. And mountains and volcanoes and also small hills, rivers, little oceans, big lakes.
Exactly. You know, that reminds me of the mid-Cretaceous period. All over the Indian-Eurasian plates, you could begin to see these south of the Yarlung Dzambo, that's where the stop movement occurred, where the tectonic plates were moving and then they stopped. But that's actually an interesting tie-in to these liquids that you were talking about in regards to the oceanic shift of the tectonic plates.
Yeah, precisely. It's like two titans coming together. A person with the great spiritual force and emotional drive and this great, massive mechanical existence with great weight and possessing deep within its belly many canisters of unusual fluids.
Right. From what I understand, they call that a northward subduction zone.
Yeah, that's the literary term, right?
Right.
That's the term that's used in the New Age literature.
Right. All of these different regions, their existence really is just part of that surface development of the plates. You know, I wonder if these drinks, if there is some kind of correspondence to the molasses deposits that one can find. I mean, actually, even up here in the White Mountains near us, certainly most of these earth processes aren't all in along with the mountain ranges of Central and Eastern Eurasia.
And what's really interesting about all of this is that under the proper circumstances, with the right education, people could be led to believe that spaghetti was grown on trees.
Yeah, that's true. And that's one interesting facet of the Hipparian fauna that most people just don't really realize at first.
And all of the art that goes into that sort of deception, the creation of pasta from organic things.
Right. Not often do you have to look at the grain size analysis, but if you're talking about quality here, when you're going to choose Kraft over maybe a homegrown version, you know, these are the factors that really increase the performance.
Yeah, performance here, of course, meaning length and consistency, and there's a term for the texture also, and the color, and ultimately the taste, how much garlic the honeys were, with honeybees were eating during the harvest time.
Right, and even there's an indicator number that will tell you exactly what proportion of calcite crystals you can find that are collected. I mean, a lot of times these are coming from the karst caves. You know, you can see their traditional Buddhist scriptures, paint carvings. This is actually, it's very opportune that it has manifested itself back into pasta these days, because this was right along the intersection, maybe even the focal point of the Silk Routes. That's, you know, as I think everyone knows, it's the West joining in with the South and the East. And it's almost like three opposing forces, certainly three opposing ideologies of knowledge coming together at one place, and that's these karst caves. The calcite crystals.
And the calcite crystals, of course, are similar in many regards to hair and to also arms. This sort of branching out, but still being a part of the caves from which they emerge.
Exactly. I think that this actually manifests itself in many of the glaciers that you see. And it's unfortunate that recently these have been receding. And so you wonder, well, does that mean that there's a higher concentration of calcite crystals being left as a residue? Or does it just mean some other message that we haven't yet understood?
And what sort of effect would eating calcite with sauce have on a person with strange dietary requirements?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, how do you even begin to name these things? The semantics involved in this type of research is really just on the cusp of, I think, where the field is moving.
Yeah, very well put. And I mean, in many ways, what I was witnessing was very similar to a vending machine.
Right. I think that there is a really interesting confluence of this technology divide. You know, that's right where we see the mediation between the old and the new. And it's not just about the old or the new, but really it's looking at how is technology locally adopted and transformed to be appropriate for these particular cultures that are, you know, I think in many places, even here today, just to bring this back to the local context, we have our indigenous crafts or technologies that I think many of us probably were born around, and we learned it without even realizing that we were learning it. It was maybe a tradition that was passed down from our forefathers and foremothers. But then the question is, well, so how exactly are we looking at adopting different technologies, and not only adopting them, but knowing the positive and negative effects of these? You know, I think a lot of what we currently use today, if it's been around long enough, these are answers that we have. But I think the questions actually still remain quite important questions for those technologies that we don't know, these new influences to our society.
So that brings us, of course, to a technology that I really still don't understand, which is the telephone.
Yeah, you know, and I think that that's actually one fortunate opportunity we can take advantage of here in the studio, is that we do have operators to handle that for us.
Right, they can manage the unusual communication by spaghetti that takes place.
That's right. It's looking at the relationship between a lake and a desert, two very distinct points of reference.
And yet really similar, right? There is the sand and the water, mm-hmm. and those are really very close.
Exactly, and the silicon.
And the hydrogen.
Right, and these days silicon really is everywhere. Even in the rainforest, people are disposing of their computers. You know, I mean, what else do you do with last year's CRT technology?
Right, shoot it off into space. We have that technology as well.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the new ones. You know, I think this is actually maybe an opportune time that we can open up those phone lines and request the assistance from our operators to handle the phones for anyone who might be interested in calling in with an input about what kind of technologies they're seeing in their lives today that they're curious, well, what are these positive and negative effects, and how are they, what is the interplay? Are they interdisciplinary technologies that could have benefited from a more traditional dissemination process, or are they solely individual technologies that just stand by themselves?
Right. Well, I think that as time passes, we find more and more often that things merge together, so that two things that were originally seen as distinct items are found, in fact, to be the same. So if we are unable to see how telephones and the growth of arboreal pasta, if these seem distinct to us now, it's only because of our ignorance or our closed-mindedness.
Exactly. And I think one of the best next steps we can take right now to get away from either our closed-mindedness or ignorance is to open up the circle and add a few nodal points by welcoming our callers into the discussion about these concepts that we're here to be exploring with you.
Right, so the sequence of digits that they must dial is 617-253-8810.
That's correct.
And right. Somehow, through the modern technology, an operator will wave from another room and you'll be on the air.
Right.
It's really amazing. There's also, we haven't announced this yet, but or in a long time, but there's an email address as well, which can be used to reach all of us here at Music for Humans, which is humans@wmbr.org.
That's correct, right.
And, of course, we often receive poetry and little anecdotes and so on from our listeners, and, we'd love to hear from you.
Right. Certainly we're not always on the same physical wavelength, but we're at least on the same electromagnetical wavelength, and that's how we're able to connect.
Right, 88.1 megahertz.
That's right, yeah.
Roughly.
And that's an interesting conclusion that you can make in looking at how do these things coincide with temperature drops or the monsoon season. And really, the monsoon season is something that doesn't just affect us in India, but also us in America.
Absolutely, it's one world, right? I mean, there is also the fiscal season, and Black Friday.
Yes, exactly, right. Yeah, that's a really good point. I guess at this point I'd just like to say thank you and also ask if you, Dr. Jalas, and also our listeners there at home can please accept this poem that I wrote. I guess I'll begin. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry I could not travel both. And be one traveler, long I stood, and looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was uneasy and wanted wear. Though, as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever stop and come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages lie. Two roads converged in a wood, and I left on the one less taken by. And that's actually really contributed a lot to my spiritual growth over the years.
That's really a beautiful, beautiful addition today. So, we have our first caller of the evening.
I think it was just a message of resonance. You can hear that tone that oscillates.
That frequency, that oscillating tone.
Back to the topic of geo-organization. I'm really interested in exploring more with our listeners tonight how it is that we, as members of the Earth here today, are able to organize our spatial array of objects.
Yeah, I used to believe that the Earth was slowly alphabetizing the continents until I realized that, you know, the Earth doesn't speak a language, so how would it know which continent to put first?
Yeah, that's a really good question. When you have things beginning with M, like montane coniferous forest, and then you have everything ending with, say, S, like subhumid areas. And where do these line up? I'm not really sure. One natural form of organization that I tend to prefer is by length. You know, you can see which ones are longer and which ones are shorter just by looking at it. And actually, as I find myself most often on Excel spreadsheets, that's one really easy way to categorize it in my mind. But yet, I've been emailing Microsoft ever since 1997 to request the that added feature. But so far, I guess my requests have gone unanswered.
Well, that's the difficulty with modern software. It's then really it's become disconnected from the user and from reality. Someone sits in a box somewhere and begins to create software, and it doesn't answer a need.
You know, that's really true. What do you call this? It's almost like it's some sort of unique geoecological phenomena.
It's like lava. It's like, you know, lava's way down there. And we don't ever say, hey, you know, I'm looking for more interesting user interfaces. The lava's just burning down there, and eventually it comes out and it doesn't do anyone any good.
Right. And lava, as we all know, has such a low moisture coefficient that it's really not as organic as many of the other objects we come in
like
practice.
Honey.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
you know, it's interesting how agriculturally developed we're becoming these days. From cultivating land and dense population to really raising productivity and preventing environments from being deteriorated in the dry valley areas mm-hmm. of the world.
Well, let's see if our caller makes it on the air this time. No, you're on the air?
Yes. How are you doing? This is Captain Griffey calling.
Welcome, Griffey.
I'm just loving your show, and I just wanted to pitch a little trip that we're taking. We're providing on the Silver Chakra. We're going around the world, and we're going to work on one chakra on every meridian. So, doing a little yoga, doing a little kundalini, and that sort of thing. And it's a sailboat. It's my old fishing boat. But most of the time now, since I'm in my 80s, I try to do yoga, you know, to stay fit, and I just want to take as many people with me as they want to go.
You know, that's great. It sounds like you're really going on a spiritual voyage, and I think it's just, it's amazing that you're opening up this opportunity for more than just yourself to partake.
Well, I'd love to share the experience. I thought I had reached enlightenment, and then my wife in the emergency room just said that I had passed out that particular time, but I think I was close. And I think being on the boat sort of brings everybody into the experience, and you know, we go around all these places that you talk about in the world, and it'd be just great to have you there.
Oh, great.
That's wonderful. Yeah, really. I mean, octogenarians really also have a unique chance to capture spirituality in those last moments, or in those close brushes.
In those close brushes, yeah. I like to think that way.
Well, that's great. So, so David, tell us, how can our listeners get in contact with you? I mean, I know that oftentimes snail mail isn't the best. So, is there another alternative means, or you know, do you have a local meetup in? You know, I'm not sure what dimension we're talking here, but
is there like a spiritual wavelength?
Well, somebody said to me that the way to get together there in Cambridge, Massachusetts, was to just to everybody that wanted to participate, go to the top of the Kendall station and just take your shirt off, and that way we'd recognize each other. And when my boat's parked out at the Boston Harbor.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's unlikely that there will be any confusion in this time of year. Very few people are, ambulating shirtless.
That's right. You know, it's just we want to get the ones that really have a commitment to show up. So we will be in Boston Harbor in 2 weeks for today. So if anybody shows up, say, right after the show at the Kendall Station 2 weeks from today at about 9 o'clock, just show up there and take your shirt off.
Great. And I imagine you'll set sail probably within the hour.
Well, as soon as we can. You know, I mean, there's a lot of red tape. We've tried to... we've kind of tried to avoid coming into the urban area, but I don't know. It looks like it should be kind of in and out, kind of hoping we get in and out of the under the radar.
Yeah.
We'll be down there in the harbor, and you'll recognize the ship. It's very old. It's older than I am.
Great. It sounds just wonderful.
Yeah, bureaucracy is so frustrating. It's again like lava.
That's right.
Very difficult to navigate through lava.
That's right. That's why we know there's a lot of spiritual seekers here in Boston, but there's a lot of lava too.
Precisely. Yeah. Very well put, Mr. Griffey.
Well, thank you very much, and we really appreciate. Tuning into the show and on the Silver Chakra. I can't really do it myself. My cabin boy has to help me with it, and he's got this thing on my ear now. There's the cell phone. I just don't understand the cell phone, but it sounds like I'm really talking to y'all. So, that's kind of a miracle to me. You know, the telephones were a miracle, and then these cell phones, whoa. You know, this little thing that's sitting there, but I can hear you.
Well,
y'all can hear me okay.
Oh, it's incredibly organic, like returning to the cell, you know, this kind of like a prison. It's very, very spiritual.
That's true. It's even often classified as a type of plateau zonation of vegetation.
In the tectonic community.
Right.
Well, anyway, we will certainly be, you know, trying to connect with you spiritually. Along your journey, I'm sure it will be a great beacon.
Excellent. Well, I'll be down at the Kendall Station with my shirt off in about 2 weeks.
Well, best of luck to you, Griffey.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Namaste.
Bye now.
Namaste now.
Yeah, really a beautiful thing when you can sacrifice so much in the effort to gain some enlightenment.
Right.
It's really cold outside, and so taking your shirt off is a very big statement.
Right. That actually reminds me of how different people may look at regionalization of temperature belts. I mean, we're up here in the Northeast, and there are just so many different natural zones, moisture regimes, soils, and vegetation that I don't know if you're able to to tell the temperature differentials just from looking outside, but that's one ability that a lot of people are beginning to develop. You know, it's the wind. That's what's really the confusing factor, I think.
They call it wind, this temperature differential.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even looking at some of the southern sides of buildings, you can go anywhere from basic topographic configurations, looking at atmospheric circulations, land use and agriculture. All of these components really do have some influence and impact on the local temperature gradient. You know, back in the 18th century, Dr. Jalas, I don't know if you had been aware of this from some of your reading, but it's generally believed that much of the population kept decreasing, and that historical population change was really looking at low level and poor medical care. So that's, I think, one point of this total amount of peaceful liberation that had gone on. You know, I'm not sure what other ways people might try to describe it, or looking at what this population rate change is like, but really I think it's this whole population plateau that indicates to us more about this mechanical change of the tectonic plates. I mean, looking at Massachusetts province, for example.
This idea that one plate bumps into another plate and deposits some metal, and in return, the second plate will deposit a fluid on the first plate.
Yeah, that's right.
And so it's very similar to vending machines.
Yeah, it's really this multinationality structure. You can go to many nations and find these vending machines. It's almost even a feeling of, say, sudden poverty when you roll out of bed. Maybe you're used to getting that kickstart from caffeine, and you realize that your entire life is being controlled by these different money mechanisms that are really just taking it right out of your pocket.
Yeah, it seems somewhat criminal to charge for something so essential.
Yes.
And yet, exactly. The vending machines also deserve a continued existence.
That's true. I mean, the technology we have today probably wouldn't have benefited as much if we didn't have other technologies that we developed off of, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So if the if the previous generation of vending machines was unable to sustain itself, to consume enough, and to eventually come together in some sort of ritual convention and produce the next generation of vending machines.
Exactly. You know, and one of these topics which I think we just barely touched on but haven't yet had a chance to really discuss is, and I think in order to fully explore this, we need the other nodal points in the circle, maybe our listeners or, you know, former members to call in, looking at what are these negatives and positives of technologies, and where do these technologies, how do they introduce themselves? I mean, I think this is actually a really critical role in looking at the next generation of New Age.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's like another sort of Well, I hate to use the word virus, but it seems similar to that. It's like a mental virus.
Sure.
You know, something that develops and mutates across our whole subculture.
Right. And so if you're listening out there and you'd like to call in and help better approximate the circle here tonight, that number is 617-253-8810. You know, I wonder what type of effects these dry and cold climates might have on really land resource sharing. That's, I think, one of the more sensitive topics that a lot of us are looking at, whether we're currently in an apartment building or if we're looking more at, say, Swedish co-housing. And there are many different methodologies here that I think we can partake in, just really depending on what resources are available here for that.
Hmm. So we have another caller. Marhaban, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
I've been thinking a lot about the topics you're talking about. I just didn't know how to even approach it.
Well, maybe a good question to begin with is, have you experienced these vending machines?
Well, I was more in tune with the technology in general, and see the vending machines as just a part of that.
As an outpouching?
Yeah. Let's see. And basically how the technology is really a reflection of our beliefs. And one of the unfortunate beliefs that we tend to carry is one of scarcity. And I think the technology tends to amplify that in some ways.
You mean that, like, that we were bred under scarce conditions over thousands of years, and so that attitude that food may not always be available?
Yeah, maybe
persists.
We're... Exactly. Maybe it's that we just haven't let go of this, of that trauma or that experience, so we're reliving it even though we no longer have to.
Yeah, that's true. And I wonder if maybe we're just trying to create new technologies just for the sole purpose of getting further away from those maybe technological mistakes we've made before. And I think in part could that be fueled by this desire, as you mentioned, to really have something in times of scarcity.
Yeah.
So, you know, I see those Little Debbie oatmeal cream pies for 25 cents, and I'm hungry now, so instead of eating... You know, one, I eat 45, because my body is telling me, eat them now because they are available now.
Well, there's actually, it's more complicated than that. Those Little Debbie cakes are an example of technology that's designed to shut off your normal intuitions and sensations that would tell you you're full.
Yeah, that's a good point. And really, they're just empty calories on top of that.
Well, yeah, but you know, caller, like, there is something to be said for this attitude, and that is that I have money today, but I may not have money tomorrow.
Yes.
So it may be the right move to eat 45. Maybe 45 is a large number, but... Well, once I start eating those cakes.
But how does that help you tomorrow? I don't understand the connection between the cakes and the, what you have tomorrow.
I'm not a biologist, but my belief is that the body will take excess snack cake energy and store it in the form of fat. In the arms and the fingers, and then if I'm hungry tomorrow, that I don't need to eat as much because the fat will sustain me.
Yeah, that's not quite true because the fats are not it's not nutritional in supporting your metabolic processes.
But it will prevent me from starving.
Okay, so that you're saying that we've managed to prevent ourselves from starving, and that's probably the emphasis of the food technology.
Right, that does seem to be where we're going, and especially, I think this is just a snowball effect where we have more and more advertising pushing us in that direction.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, caller, you know, this is a really interesting topic that you've brought us into. Are there other technologies that you've had some of these qualms with, or other things that you've observed that, you know, I mean, it's difficult to say where to start on them.
Well, if you ever, the best, you should definitely look at the, that movie, The Gods Must Be Crazy, if you want a good story to show you how absurd technology can be. And I guess for other examples, I don't know, I see it as everything because I'm in the technology field, and I don't know how to reconcile all this like distraction of our attention. You know, instead of forming relationships, we get distracted with technology in all kinds of forms, TV, internet, you name it. But
so your feeling is that we are in both a sort of, well, I know that toxic is a loaded word, but
yeah,
a toxic food environment and a toxic social environment or mental environment?
Yeah, well, it's a form of insanity, I would say, because it doesn't support our being. And anytime you're not supporting your own existence, it seems to me to be some level of insanity.
That's true. But it seems as though we're always making choices to continue in that misdirection that we've already started ourselves on. I feel like that's partly because no longer are we even remotely living within the confines of, say, any type of natural environment, right?
Yeah.
We've just built abstraction on top of abstraction, and, you know,
so
where is our sense of reality anymore, especially if we grew up in an e-reality, right?
Yeah.
So, but like, this also seems to imply two things to me. First, that when raising your children, you should be sure to give them as realistic an environment as they will experience as an adult. So that means that, for example, now I am capable of eating or of purchasing as many as 300 or 400 lollipops simultaneously. But as a child, that was never available to me. And so I trained myself to eat lollipops constantly when they were available. But if I had thousands upon thousands of lollipops, I'm fairly sure I would quickly learn to, you know, to conserve the lollipop. And secondly, that it takes a great deal of wisdom to overcome your natural instinct, which may lead you astray because of the unusual circumstances which we find ourselves in these days.
Yeah, I think it takes a while to realize what's real and what's not, or what's helpful and what's not. And I think that actually hasn't changed much, no matter how many generations we've been through. But I think things are happening so fast now that it's definitely becoming harder to adapt. And I don't know, I'm thinking of terms of mass consciousness and...
Yeah, it's interesting also that you bring up the number of people that are alive, because I wonder if that has something to do with it.
Right, and oh, sorry, caller. Also,
no,
looking at some of these other geographies, and certainly there are other places in the world where our current mainstream technology we have here say, at WMBR and the radio station is not even fathomable to many of the people, say, without electrification, right?
Right.
And so then I don't know if you have any ideas or thoughts on the matter of how do we then proceed in helping other people maybe learn from our mistakes, or, you know, are there even people interested in making that kind of effort for the future? Or maybe it's not necessary. It seems like there's a lot of interest in bringing everyone into the world of capitalism, and certainly providing a different entrance into that world than what is probably more inevitable, the way I see things, could be against some people's philosophy.
Yeah, there's a massive philosophical difference there. I know the conventional wisdom here is to, for example, I know you brought up learning from your mistakes, but one of my most wise gurus told me to make all my mistakes twice, just to make sure, you know. He said, I think the words he used were, any fool can learn from his mistakes, but you shouldn't take chances with your life. So make all your mistakes twice. Which seemed an incredibly wise thing to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I guess there's two thoughts I have about that. And,
sure, please.
The first one is, like, sometimes when it comes to making mistakes, it's really because your perspective changes naturally, and then what used to be acceptable is no longer acceptable, and then so you can either look at it as a mistake, or you can look at it that you changed or woke up or something.
Sure, right.
Or grew up, maybe.
Yeah, right.
And one other thought is I'm trying to reconcile how much of this is mistakes and how much of this is a course of evolution or destiny that, you know, we may want to slap a judgment on it, but maybe we're just transforming into something and we don't understand it yet.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a really good question. And I feel like actually we're living in the same context of not knowing what the positive and negatives of a particular newly introduced technology is going to be. And I just wonder if the effects we're having already on our world, if that's one reason we're just looking for, say, Mars or some other planet to escape to, right? And if you can escape your problems, then it's much easier, I think, to continue making errors.
Well, if you believe that you can escape them, you'll do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think maybe people haven't yet come to the realization of whether they will be escapable or not, and haven't seen the consequences of really what it is when you're not able to escape.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested, caller, in I'm not sure if we have any time left today, but hearing more on what your thoughts are for introducing some of these technologies into underdeveloped areas. Because, I mean, I guess a lot of it is inevitable, and so...
Yeah, well, I think it really goes back to that belief in scarcity in several ways. I feel like that's so strongly reinforced by both the people who supposedly are giving to the people who don't have, and then the people who don't have. And the problem is that we have all the technology we need to bring water and food to those areas, I think, but we have a distribution problem. And I don't have the global answers. I just see the craziness of the fact that we believe that you have to, like, pay for something.
Right.
Maybe it's supposed to be that way. I don't know, because it's like a resource, but it's an imaginary one.
Yeah. Well, and we've found ways around population capacity, right? We've certainly done away with that natural holding capacity.
Anyway, sadly, gentlemen, we are out of time.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, though.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah.
Ma'a salama.
Namaste.
Well, it's always difficult to end the tape.
So it is, but unfortunately the hour is over. So, ma'a salama from Dr. Janis Sakran.
And I'm Lester Woods.
So join us next week at 7 p.m. here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Stay tuned for Night Owl. Ma'a salama.
Four points for safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.